Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. The elections Tuesday night on a national, state, and local scale were a Republican Party wave of historic proportion. There are now more Republicans in Congress than at any time since 1928. Governor Walker won his third election in 4 years, and Republicans scored big gains in the state assembly and state senate. I'm Glenn Moberg, and in the weeks leading up to the election, I had the privilege of moderating four candidate debates with three great reporters: Robert Mentzer of Wausau Daily Herald Media, Paige Hulsey of WAOW Newsline 9, and Jeff Talen of WSAW News Channel 7. They are here with us this morning to look back at those debates in the 7th Congressional District, the 3rd Congressional District, the 29th State Senate District, and the 85th and 86th Assembly Districts, and to look at the results not only of those contests, but the other contests that have reshaped the political landscape in Wisconsin. We also invite you to join the conversation today. What do you think of the election results? What do they mean for the future of Wisconsin and the future of our nation? We will be taking your phone calls a little bit later in the program, and you can get in line now by calling 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. You can also put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. So Jeff, Paige, and Robert, my partners in the debates and in crime, it's so nice to have you with us this morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. Hi, thanks for having us.
Your general reactions to the Republican wave that swept Wisconsin and the nation. Let's start with Jeff.
Holy cow. I mean, I think we knew it was going to be a good night for the GOP. I didn't think we knew just how good a night it would be for the GOP at every single level.
And Paige Hulsey?
Exactly the same. I think a lot of the polls, the people were projecting this, but the extent of it, I don't think anybody had that in mind.
And Rob Mentzer.
Yeah, it was a turnout not to be that close of a governor's race in defiance of some of the polls. And I think as good a symbol as there is the fact that Marathon County's incumbent clerk of courts lost her job because she had a D after her name. Yeah. It's this weird office. It shouldn't even be a partisan office. And nothing against Shirley Lang, who I'm sure will be competent and do a fine job in the office. But I just doubt that people were really voting based on anything more than just it was kind of a Republican night.
Mandy Wright lost by a razor-thin margin in the 85th district, which surprised some people.
Yeah, I feel like we still need to be cautious because it was so razor thin. It's about 85 votes, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And I would expect there to be a recount on that. I don't know that has not been decided, but she appears to have lost, and that will be the first time in decades that 85th Assembly District will be held by a Republican, Dave Heaton.
Well, Rob Mentzer, your newspaper makes endorsements, right? And you're the opinion page editor. Does that mean that we can assume that you personally agree with every endorsement that the Daily Herald makes?
You can assume that I stand behind every endorsement that the editorial board makes. The board has different views on politics, and we have members of the board who lean more to the right and members who lean more to the left.
How many people actually make those endorsements?
Well, there are so it's a group of four editors. We brought in a couple of editors from other sites for some discussions, and then we have two reader members who are part of the board.
And then what happens? Do you vote if there's disagreement?
Yeah. So we have to reach a consensus, and so we vote. I think, and this is reflected in, for instance, our endorsement in the gubernatorial election. We wrote because it was true. There was no one on the board who was really blown away and gung-ho for either candidate for governor, major party candidates. And this is reflected in the endorsement that there was a lot of ambivalence and a sense of a lesser of two evils. And
how does the Gannett newspaper in Wausau endorse Scott Walker while the Gannett newspaper in Appleton endorses Mary Burke? How does that happen?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's that simple. We both were each newspaper was surprised to learn of the other's endorsement. It's not centralized. It's controlled at the level of the local editorial boards.
All right, one more question, then I'm through putting you on the spot. How and why did you make endorsements, Sean Duffy and Jerry Petruski, before the debates with those candidates that you were a part of? I noticed on the comments on the Wausau Daily Herald. There were some people who said you should have held off with those endorsements.
Yeah, and it's and honestly, it's a totally fair point. It was a decision that we made because one of our principles is we want our endorsements to run before our deadline for reader responses. That's one of the values that we hold when it comes to endorsements is that ours should not be the last word. So we ran endorsements, and it was not – that is not our preference. Those debates happened later than we preferred, and as you know, we arranged that. We tried to have them earlier. But
and it didn't work out with some of the candidates.
Yeah, it didn't work out logistically. So that's – so you weigh things out. And in this case, we weighed in. We had interviewed the candidates ourselves. The debate was not our first exposure to these candidates. We held our editorial board interviews, which we live streamed on our site. And the editorial board deliberated. We made endorsements. And then we invited people, go attend the debate, make up your own mind, and tell us what you think of our decision. And that there was a downside to that decision. It was not ideal. But that was how we thought about the issue. That was how we weighed it out.
To your credit, I thought they were well-written, well-thought-out. People may not agree with them, but I thought they were – you did your homework. Is
sure.
what I thought in
well,
reading
thanks.
Them. So congratulations.
Yeah,
on that.
Thanks. And you know, an endorsement is, it carries so much weight to some readers, but really it's just another editorial. It's a distillation of what our editorial board discussion was that we hope helps people to start a conversation or think about, you know, sort of refine their own thinking. I agree with this. This is insane. I totally disagree. They make a good point. And we hope that has some value in fostering a larger conversation. But, you know, it's all up for debate. It all can be criticized.
It is up for debate. And
yeah.
It certainly was during the weeks leading up to the election.
Bring it. That's a good conversation.
All right. I've got, you know, like eight or nine clips that I'm going to play this
okay.
morning, and I'd better get started or we're not going to get to them. Let's move to Kelly Westland's concession speech. This was made at the Labor Temple. She was the Democratic candidate in the 7th Congressional District race. This is Kelly Westland Tuesday night in Wausau.
You know, I got into this race, after all, because I really do believe that we can do better for ourselves and for each other. But change is never easy, and despite a flawed system, we cannot be apathetic. We cannot give in to cynicism. We've got to find the ways to engage so that we can shape the future that we can all be proud of. After all, we get the government that we're willing to work for and the rights that we're willing to fight for. This fight is about a better future. It's about our democracy and the values that we hold dear. This fight is about fairness and justice and equality and freedom, and we cannot let up because our work is not yet done. And I'm an optimist, so I'll keep fighting for the future that we can all be proud of. And I know that I am not alone in that work. You're still standing with me. And you don't know how grateful I am for all that you've done and all that we're going to continue to do together. Thank you very much.
That's Kelly Westland at the Labor Temple. She lost handily to Sean Duffy. And just for our listeners, there was an internal edit in that piece. I cut out a couple of paragraphs there. Kelly Westland, Paige Hulsey, sounds like she's interested in running again.
Oh, yeah. I don't think Kelly Westland is going anywhere. You know, she admitted that she was called a hard-nosed optimist by some members of her team. I also don't know that that clip showed her having much confidence in Duffy or in the people that the constituents did select. So I think she might stick around to try to bring up the issues that she believes in once again. I don't think we're going to see – this isn't the end of Kelly Westland.
But this is certainly portends well for Sean Duffy. He has won his third consecutive race now. Is there any chance of anybody unseating him in this 7th Congressional District, which is now more Republican than it used to be?
Isn't it amazing how when I got here 20 years ago, you know, with all due respect to everybody, I heard a saying that Dave Obey wanted to stand on top of Rib Mountain and not see a Republican anywhere, mm-hmm. and how we've evolved now into a Republican area.
I was going to say, I don't know that Kelly Westland will come back for this position. I think showing the margin that Duffy won, he does have a pretty strong hold in the area. But I don't think it's the end of her.
And, you know, the other thing, though, is there is this structural fact about American elections now, which is the electorate in a midterm election is way different than the electorate in a presidential year. And that's true in the 7th district as it is across the nation. In general, the presidential year gets more younger voters and more liberal voters, more voters who belong to minority groups who are more likely to be Democrats. So I don't. The truth is, I think that Sean Duffy won by an enormous margin. He has a money machine as a member of the House Financial Services Committee, and he's a very good politician. I think he'll be hard to beat at any time. But, you know, it is a midterm is the hardest time, and a presidential year might be a little easier.
Let's move to Sean Duffy's victory speech. This was at the Jefferson Street Inn across town Tuesday night. He's going to start with a list of things that have gone wrong with the Obama administration in the past year, and he ends with a list of things that he thinks the Republican House and Republican Senate will accomplish. And like the last clip I played, there is an internal edit. I've kind of pushed together two parts of this victory speech so that we can discuss them later.
Think about all the crises that we've had over just the last year, from Ebola, ISIS, kids cross their southern border from Central America, $1 billion of taxpayer money, your money, to give us a website for Obamacare that doesn't work, Cylindra, the IRS, Benghazi, an $18 trillion debt, and the list goes on. I'm going to tell you what. Wisconsin and America are sick of it. Yeah. Then the question comes, where are we going? If we get the chance to actually lead, if we take the Senate, what are we going to do? We're going to reform our tax code. We're going to make it fairer, flatter, simpler for everybody. We're going to roll back some of the Dodd-Frank regulations so we can have our small community banks and credit unions that can get capital and money to small Main Street communities so our businesses can expand and grow and our families can maybe buy a house and a car. We're going to repeal and replace Obamacare.
Big applause line there for that partisan crowd. But Rob Mincer, I don't recall him at least emphasizing that he was going to repeal Obamacare in that debate we did just a few days before.
He pointedly declined to answer that question that was put directly to him. And I'm going to tell you, he's not going to repeal and replace Obamacare. Repeal of Obamacare will not happen in the next Congress. It won't happen while Obama's the president, certainly. That is a bunch of red meat. I mean, that's a weird, you know, a politician's going to be a politician, I suppose. And on election night, people are fired up, and that's your base. But like the Ebola crisis, what does that even have to do with the next Congress? I don't get that. So that's a lot of talk that I think will not be followed up.
Well, what he did do is list all of the things that have gone wrong with the Obama administration in the past year. And Ebola was one of them. The children streaming across the southern border, Russia invading Crimea, ISIS. The wheels seem to fall off.
You know, Sean Duffy was on our program the next morning, just a few hours after that concession or after that victory speech. He was on Wake Up Wisconsin. And that same enthusiasm of, you know, once the Republicans did take control of the Senate and knowing that he was enthusiastic about the potential for them addressing some of those. But he did, you know, mention that it's not going to be all these aren't just going to be easy battles with Obama, you know, still there. There are going to be some things that are going to be a little bit more difficult. So while there was that enthusiasm and probably writing off, it was election night and that victory and that adrenaline.
You say crazy things.
But the next morning acknowledging, okay, these were his priorities. There are still some hurdles for the Republicans, even though they have control.
And just to say, not to interrupt, but just to say that he mentions the Dodd-Frank reforms, and that's something that is obviously important to him and probably is actually pretty achievable. I would expect that some of those changes will happen.
Jeff Talen, in the debate, Duffy surprised me by saying that he was open to raising the minimum wage. He didn't mention that in the victory speech.
He did. He put a big old asterisk next to it, though, saying if we raise the minimum wage, we have to I can't remember exactly what he said. Something along the lines of we have to protect the small businessman. So I'm assuming if he goes along with it, it's going to be very limited with some parentheses and asterisks with it, that it's not going to affect everybody.
Well, you know, the voters overwhelmingly say they want to raise the minimum wage when they're polled or when there are referendums on the question. Why weren't the Democrats able to translate that message into votes anywhere in the country?
We actually had an expert on. We talked about this yesterday on News Channel 7. We talked to an expert, professor from UW Stevens Point, who pointed out that people just vote for candidates a lot differently than what they vote for issues. Mm-hmm. It's easy to get into a ballot box and say, yeah, we need higher wages, and yeah, we should get that federal money for the Medicare, Medicaid. But when it comes to voting for candidates, you vote a lot for personality more than what you do issues, unfortunately.
If you just joined us, you're listening to Jeff Talen of News Channel 7, Paige Hulsey of Newsline 9, and Rob Mentzer, the Wausau Daily Herald, who participated in four candidates' debates with me over the past month. They are analyzing the election results. We'd also like to hear from you. How do you like the results with the way things turned out? Do you have an opinion? Why do you think there was a Republican wave? And if you're a Democrat, what can the Democrats do to reverse their fortunes in a couple of years? Maybe it's not possible. 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. We're going to go to a clip from the 7th District Congressional debate now, as Rob Mentzer asks a question about what he calls the scientific fact of climate change.
What is the right response to the scientific fact of global warming?
And we start with Sean Duffy, 90 seconds, followed by Kelly Westland.
Can you clarify, would you say this was the coldest
year?
The warmest year.
This was the hottest year.
Okay. Last winter seemed awfully cold, but I'll leave that alone.
That's true in our part of the world, but that is not true.
I know what you're asking about. Listen, I think it's important that we have a common sense approach to our environment. I think a lot of us live in this area because we like the outdoors. We like to hunt and fish and ski and boat. And it's important that we take care of it. And we have common sense ideas that preserve our environment, not just for all of us to use, but for future generations. And being responsible is key. But I think it's also important to have common sense policies that match up care for the environment, but also allow us to compete and have economic growth in our area. I also think it's important to look at commerce in other parts of the world. Look at India and China and the role that they play in the world in which we live. I mean, the environment isn't just built walls around the United States of America. It's a world environment. And I think we have to inspire other people in other places in the world to do things far more cleanly than they currently do.
And Kelly Westland, you have 90 seconds.
I couldn't agree more that we ought to inspire other countries to take more qualitative steps toward addressing the serious issue that is climate change. But part of that means leading by example. You know, I know that there is a balancing act between protecting the environment, reducing our carbon emissions, and making sure that we protect our economic sectors. But the fact is that we live in a limited biosphere. And you're right, there are very real challenges coming at us. This is an opportunity. This is an opportunity to innovate, to address some of our biggest energy concerns. And really, when you think about the cost of energy, the most cost-effective energy form that we have is the energy that we don't waste. Why not put people to work weatherizing our homes, making our power grid more efficient?
That was Kelly Westland and Sean Duffy talking about climate change at the 7th Congressional District debate, which took place October 29th here on the UW Marathon County campus. Panelists, scientists say it's real. They say it's happening now. You can point to things like record high global temperatures, years of drought in places like California, extreme weather events like Hurricane Sandy and Hurricane Katrina, coral reefs bleached out and dying, the acidification of oceans, the destruction of the world's fisheries. We're in a major global extinction event, the sixth in Earth's long geological history, and rising ocean waters that threaten to submerge the Bahamas and southern Florida. Yet the voters don't seem to care about it, and many Republicans either deny the science or don't think we should do anything about it. Rob, it was your question.
Yeah, and it's offensive to be so flip as to say, well, but it was cold last winter. The issue is very serious, and it deserves to be treated seriously. Now, that's not to say that there isn't an actual balance to be struck. There is a hard balance. The fact is that people do need jobs today, and there are a lot of jobs that rely on the fossil fuel industry. There are a lot of changes that would be required to make changes that need to happen. But I think that that less flipness would be a good start from the congressman. And I think honestly, there's a ton of stuff that can be done about you know, solar energy, wind energy, and incremental steps that we can be taking now that shouldn't, that don't have to be sort of a partisan matter or issues that fall into ideological camps.
Jeff Talen,
it was interesting. I was sitting at the end of the table, and that question rings because when you asked it, you put in the scientific fact of climate change, of global warming. You could, and maybe you guys couldn't hear it, but I could at the end of the table hear the murmur coming from, coming from the Duffy half of the audience that night, simply not believing it. And then him giving that answer, which was clearly geared toward that part of his base that simply doesn't believe it's happening.
Let's move to the phones. We have Dave in Rothschild. Dave, you're on Route 51.
Oh, good morning, Glenn. Yeah, I just have a real quick comment, and I just thought of it when you're discussing how during Sean's acceptance speech, he said, oh, we're going to repeal Obamacare. But you thought, funny he didn't mention it at all during the debate. Well, that just points also to Sean's intellectual dishonesty, because I remember when you interviewed him a few years ago, it was for, I think, your 5 p.m. show. It was later in the afternoon.
Yeah, they changed the time of the Route 51 show.
Same show. But a caller just asked a question point blank to Sean saying, did you sign Grover Norquist's no new tax pledge? And the guy asked it over and over and over again, and Sean just ignored it, would not answer him at all.
All right, Dave, thanks.
So that kind of points to Sean's character. Oh, I guess it's lacking.
Yep. Well, Dave, that's your opinion. Thank you so much for sharing it with us. 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. I don't know if anyone wants to comment about that. Or
I mean, I'll just say that it's that Duffy's position on Obamacare has not been hidden. I mean, it was. I agree. He did not run on repeal this year in the way that he did in 2012 after promising not to in 2010, but he did pointedly decline to respond to that question. But I think we can assume that his position held. He is against Obamacare.
Let's move to the third congressional district debate. This one took place October 30th on the UW Stevens Point campus. Ron Kind and Tony Kurtz. We asked the candidates about ISIS and the problem of lone wolf terrorism. Incumbent Democrat Ron Kind started talking about education policy in response to that question. That upset Republican Tony Kurtz, who served 2 tours of duty in Iraq.
And right now we've got a state and decisions coming out of Madison that's drastically cutting the education budget, driving students deeper into debt. Typical undergraduates looking at about $28,000.
Congressman, let's talk about ISIS. Let's not talk about the education program here in Wisconsin.
Well,
because the beheading in Oklahoma was not a student from Wisconsin. The individual that killed the Canadian soldier in Iraq in Canada was not a Wisconsin student. So let's stay focused on what the issue is.
I thought we were talking about the radicalization of individuals and what we can do to prevent that so they're not conducting terrorist
But you're talking
operations.
About Wisconsin schools now.
But anyway, I think it's an important topic because we are on this university campus and we are talking about the future of this regional economy, our state, and our country. And more needs to be focused on good educational opportunities. I offered a 5-point plan earlier this year in order to reduce student debt and make it easier for kids to go on to school, something that I had to do by taking out student loans and Pell Grants.
Ladies and gentlemen, I really don't know what ISIS sympathizers have to do with Pell Grants. We have a problem here in the United States. We have ISIS. We have an unsecure border. One of the very first things we need to do is have a grown-up discussion about securing our border. ISIS is real. ISIS is in this country. They're sympathizers. And the last thing I want to do is allow more ISIS to come through our southern border and talk and organize these sympathizers that are in our larger cities. It has nothing to do with Pell Grants. It has everything to do with these young men having no other way out. And it does start in the Middle East.
Well, it has everything to do with good educational attainment and enhancing people's skills and giving them a better future to choose from. And our neglect and our turning the back on it is what's driving them into these radical notions to begin with. So,
and Middle Eastern unemployment has nothing to do with the growth of ISIS overseas.
Does not require a military response. Every problem is not a nail that needs a big hammer to nail down.
Congressman Ron Kind and his challenger is a Republican challenger, Tony Kurtz, who was kind of frustrated with Mr. Kind's answer. And this was during one of the open discussion periods, which I always try to put into debates so that candidates have to question each other and talk to one another. Your reaction to what you just heard?
You know, this one, this was very memorable. This was a memorable part of this debate. And when Kind took it to education, I kind of thought the same thing of where are we going? I thought we were talking about ISIS. And then Kurtz kind of took it to Ebola in Mexico. And I wasn't really sure that either one of them answered the question in the direction that we were asking, or we were kind of wondering about the relevance of the points that they were bringing up. Because we talked about Ebola later in the night. We were talking about education later in the night. But when it came from ISIS, it was an interesting way to take it.
All right. You're setting up my next clip. This is a short clip from the same debate. Tony Kurtz, again returning to the question of border security, Ron Kind accuses him of spreading fear.
We have to have a step-up program to secure our border. That's a must with Ebola, with ISIS, with other communicable diseases. This is the right time to have bipartisan support to actually secure our border.
This idea that all we got to do is travel bans and quarantine and secure the southern border so that ISIS won't infect someone, sneak them into Mexico and have them cross the border is ludicrous. There is no evidence of that happening.
And Paige Hulsey, you asked that question. We'll let you piggyback on it again. And part of the question was, is there hysteria being ginned up by Ebola? And, you know, if there was hysteria, we're to blame for it, right? Wall-to-wall coverage in television and radio.
And, you know, a few of the candidates pointed that out, that it is the media who's talking about it. But then when you have answers like that, when you're trying to talk about ISIS and then it turns into Ebola coming in through Mexico, I think that contributes to the hysteria.
Rob Mentzer, you're in the print media, and so...
The sober...
Correct.
Reflective, careful, responsible print media. Yes. Go on.
You had questions about whether or not we should be asking questions about Ebola when we had these debate meetings and we decided what we were going to be asking the candidates.
Yeah, Ebola is not a significant issue in the United States. The United States has a lot of health infrastructure, and there were some cases where procedures weren't followed, and it turns out that there were more where they were, and Ebola is not spreading in the United States. It's over. That's not to say that it's not an issue on people's minds, and certainly it is a foreign policy issue. The question of aid for Liberia and elsewhere is serious, and that is a consideration. But you heard it in so point Tony Kurtz on the education digression earlier, but you heard it in that answer that Tony Kurtz's, the Republican candidate's strategy there was, the world is really scary and you should all be scared. The southern border, Ebola and ISIS are all somehow connected, and aren't you scared? And that's crazy. That's no way to make a decision.
Richard Nixon once said that voters are more motivated by fear than they are by hope.
Yeah. And, but I mean, those things are not connected. Any one of those issues could be an issue on their own, but to try to sort of roll them all up together is a little bit transparently manipulative.
I think it became relevant because of the midterm elections and because people were questioning the government's response to it. I agree that Ebola huge threat to the U.S., but questioning the government's role both abroad and then the response here at home.
Jeff Talen, really quick, and then we got to take
it
a break.
Really was making headlines at the time, and I think we needed to offer them the opportunity to say exactly what you just said. Mm-hmm. Because of our healthcare infrastructure, it's not going to happen here, and we need to help places where it does. Secondly, as long as Kind has been in politics, he did not do a good job connecting how making education better may prevent people from becoming crackpots down the line. He just brought up education and kind of didn't connect the dots very well.
Sure.
For someone who's a longtime politician, he didn't do a very good job with
Jeff
that question.
Jeff Talen of News Channel 7, Paige Hulsey of Newsline 9, Robert Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald. I'm Glenn Moberg. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. We'll be back to talk about state politics after this.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a place to call home. Familiar voices, timely conversations, uplifting entertainment. Nearly 500,000 listeners tune in every week, benefiting from the programs made possible thanks to WPR member support.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Our guests today, Jeff Talin of WSAW-TV, Paige Hulsey of WAOW-TV, Rob Menser of the Wausau Daily Herald, and Stevens Point Journal. 1-800-780-9742 if you've got opinions on the election, or you can put a message on our Facebook page, the Route 51 Facebook page, which Matt did. And Matt, I don't know if you joined us late, but we've already discussed this. He writes, the Wausau Daily Herald participated in many debates after already endorsing specific candidates that were in those debates. I find this disingenuous. And again, Rob, you explained that it's because the debates happened late and you wanted to give people a chance to write letters to the editor.
There were two instances of that.
Let's move to one of those debates, one in which you endorsed Jerry Petruski, who won a landslide reelection against Paul DeMaine. Paul DeMaine, who is the CEO of Indian Communications. And let's hear what they had to say on the issue of the Pinocchio Hills mine and the mining legislation that led up to it. Jerry Petruski is the first voice that we're going to hear.
We allowed them to have a permitting process that was probably a little simpler than it was years ago. And it's under the oversight of the EPA, the Army Corps of Engineers, and the Wisconsin DNR. And if that mine cannot be built and run safely, then it should not happen. And I believe it can. We've been mining in this country for a long time, in this state for a long time, and I believe that we can have a mine that will produce jobs, that will produce commerce, and one that we really will benefit the whole state.
Paul DeMaine, you have 90 seconds.
Yes, this is one of the issues that got me into considering running for office, because I thought the process, or the lack of the process, is one of the most disrespectful, distasteful processes that I've ever seen, in which the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers wasn't even invited to the hearings on the bill, in which tribal chairman and elected leaders were told they had 2 minutes to speak, and when little egg ringer went off, were shooed off the stand because it was almost like things were predestined. Now we find out that there was a $700,000 secret donation to Club to Growth. The money was then split up to support senators, Republican senators in the state, for the reelection, to make sure that there was a pro-mining caucus or group of elected officials there who would vote for this pure bill.
Paul DeMaine, had he been elected, would have been the only Native American in the state Senate. The Pinocchio Hills mine, the mining legislation, very passionate for people like Paul DeMaine and Kelly Westland, but in the end, it didn't seem to affect any of the elections.
That's a classic conflict. I mean, first of all, both Petruski and DeMaine just brought it that night, didn't they? I was so impressed by
really
both of those.
Yes.
Well-educated, good stuff, clearly on different sides, but it's a classic debate. Between, boy, we need those jobs badly, or boy, we don't want to ruin our water. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you win?
It's in the hands of the courts now, really. It's in the hands of the EPA now. There are still permits. There are still legal questions to be worked out. But the policy is done. So for someone like Paul DeMaine or Kelly Westland, it was an occasion for them to get into politics. It activated them in certain respects. You know, they're not like the first time they thought about politics, but I think it got them involved because it was something they care about, and that's great. But, you know, the policy is passed. I mean,
you know, Native American tribes have a different standard for the environment than the EPA does, the DNR does. If you talk to people who are active in that community, they say no pollution is okay, 0%, because we eat the fish. We depend on the wild rice beds. These are our resources. So there's a cultural divide there, which is complicated by the fact that they're sovereign nations. So you have different units of government.
Yeah, it's complicated. But I mean, this is why we have the legal system that we have, right? I mean, there are authorities to decide who has jurisdiction where and what, you know, sort of which experts' final judgment carries.
And this is something we brought up in several debates of, if you were elected, what would you do to improve the relationships between the government and the tribes? Not a lot of people had a clear answer, you know, other than saying, oh, we'll sit down and talk. But, you know, will that happen? Has that happened? It's a great idea.
Great
What's going
to
come up?
They didn't say, they didn't have nothing on that.
Right. Yeah.
I also wonder sometimes, that, you know, because this district is so big, now there are some people definitely here in Wausau and the surrounding area who feel very passionately about this. But I wonder sometimes if it carries the same impact in this part of this district that it does in the northwestern part, because it is so many miles away from what you may call the epicenter of Wausau and surrounding communities.
I think the answer is no.
I think
you're
right.
I don't think there is the same passion here as it is there.
If it was going, say, in Brokaw, it would be much bigger here.
Sure. Yeah.
One of the surprises in the elections was the razor-thin margin of Republican Dave Heaton over Mandy Wright in the Wausau-based 85th District. Here are two clips from the candidates' debate that the four of us participated in that featured those two candidates.
Small businesses get hit harder with the regulatory burdens. There's things we can do to streamline the regulatory process. There's things we can do to help small businesses. Certainly we need to keep our taxes lower and be more competitive with other states.
Accept the federal funds for the statewide extension of Badger Care. Invest in our public schools. We spent the money that was projected as a surplus before it even came in the door. And that's never responsible. That's not what families do, and that's not what our government should have done.
Mandy Wright, who lost to Dave Heaton by a slim, I think, what, an 86 vote margin? That could be a recount.
Yeah.
On her Facebook page, on her Facebook page yesterday, she hadn't committed to it yet.
With that slim of a margin, with less than one percentage point, she does have 3 days to ask for a recount. That would be a free recount because it's so slim, and then she has 3 days to request that. I think they were waiting for the official totals. You know, that might come in today, and we'll know maybe later today if there will be an official recount. But, yeah, such a slim margin.
When I was at the Labor Temple Tuesday night talking to shell-shocked Democrats, I talked to Donna Seidel, who held the 85th Assembly seat for many years, and she said to me, well, at least we're still going to have Mandy Wright. And as it turns out, you're not showing the depth of this sweeping Republican wave.
Yeah, and it was pointed out to me, the 85th District Assembly District, which has been held by Democrats for ages, as we said, Sean Duffy won it in 2012. Governor Walker won it in the recount within that district. So there are people voting for Republicans within the 85th District, and this time they made it down to the bottom of the ballot and voted Republican there too.
Rob Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald, Paige Hulsey of Newsline 9, Jeff Talen of News Channel 7. I'm Glenn Moberg. If you've got opinions about the election results and you'd like to voice them live on the air, this is your opportunity. You've got about 15 minutes to weigh in. 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742, or put a comment on our Facebook page. Now, another incumbent Democrat lost her assembly seat on Tuesday. In the 70th District, Amy Sue Vruwink was defeated by Nancy Vandermeer. Here are the candidates talking about the controversy over the Medicaid expansion money last month on the Route 51 show.
It could be over a $500 million savings for the state of Wisconsin if we were to take this Medicaid money and to cover more people instead of shoving them off and saying you're on your own. We have a moral obligation to take care of our citizens, to make sure they're not using emergency rooms.
Given the fact of the growing deficit federally, was there an assurance that we would have gotten that money? I think we're headed in the right direction. All of the people in Wisconsin living in poverty right now have access to Badger Care.
And that last voice was Nancy Vandermeer, who unseated Amy Sue Vruwink, who has represented the 70th Assembly District for a long time. Democrats across the state tried to make an issue out of the governor's refusal to take the Medicaid expansion money, and they failed.
Did they? There were a bunch of referendums that passed resoundingly, and I think that polling shows that it's a fairly popular viewpoint. Senator Jerry Petrusky, who won by a lot, favors taking the Medicaid expansion. I think that it may just be that other issues won out, but I don't know. I don't know if I would say that people are rejecting the Medicaid expansion. I don't know that I would agree with that.
Didn't affect their votes for Amy Sue Vruwink or Mandy Wright or Governor Walker.
It may well have affected their votes for all those people, but they may have weighed other issues more highly.
Yeah, Jeff.
There were certainly, I don't know if y'all saw it, and it was well-timed amid all the other election commercials that we saw leading up to the vote on Tuesday. Somebody made a buy, and I don't know if it was Vruwink's opponent herself or it was a supporter, but it was in the last week. It was all over the place. A very, very anti-Amy Sue Vruwink commercial all over the airwaves. I don't know if that had an impact on the vote or not, but it was there, and it was nasty.
Vruwink was a holdout. She took a bite in redistricting. She was in a district that would be considered naturally to lean Republican, and she was always going to have a tough reelection, especially in the midterm year.
She took more than a bite. The 70th district is sprawling. It's a 2-hour drive from one end in Portage County to the other end, which is almost in La Crosse.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
And Vruwink claims that Republicans drew that district just in order to ensure her defeat.
Yeah, she's right.
They took out a major base of her support. They took out her former high school and the school that her daughter attends, and a lot of her friends and relatives who used to be in her district are no longer there anymore.
It sounds like we're talking about the G word now.
Gerrymandering.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. That said, listen, a lot of Democrats lost on Tuesday, you know.
Yeah.
Have Republicans cemented control of the legislature in perpetuity because of gerrymandering? I mean, once you get that result, it's going to be hard to roll it back.
Yeah, but you know what? People find a way to throw the bums out, right? People threw the bums out in 2006 and 8 and 10 in one place or another. And I think that the gerrymandering is destructive to politics and is bad for democracy. But I am not fatalistic. I think that there are ways.
Plus, I think it's going to go in waves either way.
Cyclical.
You always have, yes.
Yeah, cyclical is a word that comes to my mind.
Well, one of the points I make to my Democratic friends is that they had a chance when they controlled the state house and both houses of the legislature,
right,
to institute a system similar to what we have in Iowa, where a nonpartisan panel draws those districts, and they didn't do it.
That's right.
Probably because they thought they'd be in control and they'd be able to gerrymander the districts in their favor. So, you know, a pox on both of their houses.
It is one place that both parties share, and that's not wanting to give up the power.
Let's move to the 86th Assembly District, which was also redrawn in 2010. Incumbent Republican John Spiros of Marshfield defeated Democrat Nancy Stensel of Rib Mountain, who tried to make an issue out of the minimum wage. Here's a clip from the debate that all four of us participated in.
To make money, you need to spend money. And raising the minimum wage in itself is a job creator. People need a living wage. There is no reason on the face of this earth somebody should be out there working 40 hours a week and still have to rely on food stamps.
Our unemployment rate is down the lowest since 2008. You look at what we did from turning around a deficit to a positive is impressive. So when you look at things, I'm looking at it from the standpoint that Wisconsin is going forward.
John Spiros, who handily won re-election against Nancy Stensel. Your reaction?
We talk about the minimum wage a little bit earlier, and the thought I had is there is a moral weight to Nancy Stensel's argument that I agree with, that I endorse, that somebody who works full time and is still below the poverty line, there's something wrong with that. And that is I think that's a powerful moral argument. Politically, there aren't that many of those people. Now, there's more than there have been. There's too many today. But as a political appeal, it's a pretty small slice of the population.
And then I think on the other hand of the moral issue is people are always concerned with the small businesses. And so when you talk about raising the minimum wage, what is that impact going to be on the small businesses? No one wants to say they're going to hurt the small businesses.
I always think you could get a tape of every time the minimum wage has been raised from $2.99 or whatever it was way back all those decades ago to what it is now. And you would hear the same arguments you heard all those years ago. Oh my goodness, it's going to cost jobs. These jobs were just meant as beginners and then you have to get a better one versus what you just said. And that is, if people had more money to spend, the economy would be better and nobody should have to live in poverty.
I actually heard those arguments from Harry Truman on an old archive tape that I saw on television a couple of weeks ago when he raised the minimum wage. I think it was back in 1948. So, you know, in a sense, We never resolve anything in this country. You know, the same arguments keep playing out year after year after year, going all the way back to the birth of the republic. What is the proper role of government? How big should government be? How much security should we have? How much freedom should we have? How do you define those things? It's like the argument just never ends. Mm.
But that's great, right? That's what it's supposed to be.
It keeps us in business. Let's play one more Assembly District clip. This is the 72nd Assembly where incumbent Republican Scott Krug defeated Democrat Dana Duncan, who is the president of the Port Edward School District, School Board, excuse me, and also an outspoken opponent of the proposed Golden Sands Dairy Project, a concentrated animal feeding operation, or CAFO, in the town of Saratoga. Here are the two of them on a Route 51 program just 2 weeks ago.
The more I delved into it, the more I realized this is a potential catastrophe for the environment. CAFOs in general, as I've said repeatedly, are to agriculture what sweatshops and child labor were to manufacturing 100 years ago.
Nobody's the bad guy in the room when it comes to this discussion. We're talking about a single project that doesn't fit in a certain area, and we're going to look for a way to make, you know, projects in certain areas work. Wisconsin has an $88 billion ag economy. We are the dairy state. We have to find ways to make it work in the right areas at the right time.
That was Scott Krug, who won re-election against Dana Duncan. And Mr. Krug, several weeks before the election, came out against the Golden Sands Dairy Project, urging the DNR not to approve high-capacity wells for it, pointing to water quality issues on area lakes that have closed some beaches. Duncan accused him of taking the stance in order to win the election.
Politicians are going to be political. It's not reasonable to expect a politician not to think about his or her reelection. But to Scott Krug's credit, Representative Krug worked on groundwater committees. He worked on groundwater issues. He talked to a number of people who are not in his natural base on this issue, and he took a position that went against his natural political, the sort of pro-business, natural conservative political stance. He opposed this project, which on the merits seems like it would really be bad for the area. So I think that's representing his constituents.
We have a comment from Christy on Facebook. Would you please comment on why there was a Republican sweep, but a lot of the issues, minimum wage, expanding Medicare, gun control, that Democrats trumpet, also won? What does this say about our nation? Now, with gun control, I think she's talking about out west in Washington State. Mm. There was some sort of a referendum on that. Why the disconnect between who the people vote for and the issues that they support?
Jeff addressed this a little bit, and we've talked about it, and it is a big question, and in some ways the big question about this election. I think the truth is it's kind of cheap to vote for a referendum. You sort of say, yeah, sure, it seems like a good idea, but you know, it's also that people's political views are not necessarily coherent, and they're not necessarily no one's a single issue voter, and sometimes you vote based on a general feeling about the direction of the country or a general feeling about a candidate and try to sort of reverse engineer your policy preferences afterwards.
We also talked about this last night on the Tuesday night on the show. I believe it was Eric Giordano who said it's pretty historic that the party of the incumbent president does poorly in the midterms.
This
was just a historic night where the Democratic president took a bath.
It seems like it's going to be a predictable 2 years in Wisconsin, but an interesting 2 years in Washington. Mm-hmm. Mitch McConnell and President Obama were saying nice things about each other, but the president said yesterday that he'll issue an executive order on immigration, maybe providing a path to citizenship for millions of Mexican immigrants if Congress doesn't act before the end of the year. Some Republicans in Congress have threatened to impeach him if he does that, and he almost seems to be daring them to do it.
It does seem like that. It's almost like a threat, or also the threat of the veto. We've been hearing that from him as well. So even though the Republicans do have, you know, they did gain control of the Senate, I don't think that a lot of these issues are going to be easy. You know, they've been talking about some issues that they want to push through now or resolve because they have so much control. But, you know, President Obama is standing his ground on a lot of these things, and I think he is going to use, you know, his powers where he wants or where his party would like.
Jeff Talen, I need you to weigh in on this, then Rob Menser, and then we've got to say goodbye.
I think the first thing we're going to see is the Keystone Pipeline, which has been an issue for a long time now, and that's going to be one of the first ones, I believe, that the Republicans try to get through.
And Rob Menser, you've got the last word.
I take exception to the whole premise. I think it's going to be continued gridlock and boring dysfunction in Washington. But in Wisconsin, I think actually we could be headed for some sort of interesting conflicts between sort of the hardline Waukesha faction of the Republican Party and some of the more moderate members of the Republican Party, including central Wisconsin legislators.
Well, you have those factions playing out in Washington, too, with the Tea Party wing and the evangelical wing and the neocons.
Yeah, but Obama's just gonna veto anything, so they still won't get anything done. In Wisconsin, they could actually pass bills.
But you know, you can do poison pill legislation where you tack controversial amendments onto something that he's got to sign, and that's where the rubber's going to hit the road.
Well, we'll see.
We want to
sounds terrible. By the way, sounds like it's going to be a rough couple of years.
We want to thank today's guests, our debate partners and panelists, Robert Menser of Wausau Daily Herald Media, Paige Hulsey of WAOW Newsline 9, and Jeff Talen of WSAW News Channel 7. Thanks again to our debate sponsor, the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, and its director, Eric Giordano. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, and our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Next Thursday on Route 51, we welcome Joe Murchison, president of the 555th Parachute Infantry Association and one of the famed Triple Nichols paratroopers who broke the color barrier in World War II. Mr. Murchison will be in central Wisconsin next week in connection with the Walk in Their Shoes program. He'll appear next Monday evening at Edgar High School and Tuesday evening at UW Marathon County. Remember to follow us on Facebook. If you missed part of the show, you can hear it again in its entirety Friday night at 7 on WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. And until next week, we're heading out of town.